Hi, and welcome back to the Business of Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Tara Humphrey. I run an award-winning healthcare consultancy specialising in supporting primary care networks. I'm a facilitator. I am a mum of three. I have an MBA, and I would class myself as a bit of an adventurer. And I absolutely love all things business, all things leadership, all things management. So I created this podcast for clinical and non-clinical colleagues working in the field of health and care, and for those of you looking to develop your leadership skills. Every week we release an episode which focuses on the hard and soft skills required to lead in this increasingly complex environment as we move to delivering more integrated care. So let's jump into this week's episode. And welcome back to the Business of Healthcare podcast. I hope you guys are doing well. So in this episode, I had the absolute pleasure of interviewing Kate Langford. Kate is the Chief Medical Officer at Kent and Medway Integrated Care Board, and we discuss the challenges of delivering care across a large healthcare system, the importance of communication, and the importance of collaboration. I really wanted to get her advice on the stakeholder engagement piece, as it's really timely now because a lot of integrated care boards will be creating or drafting their primary care strategies. So I really wanted to get her approach to that. Kate also just shares a little bit of a window into her life, how she manages the requests on her time, and how she is just engaging the multiple players in this space. So in Kent and Medway, there is four trusts. There are 42 primary care networks. There is a mental health trust. There is a community trust and just a myriad of other voluntary and community organisations, plus pharmacy, plus optometry, plus dentistry. So there is a lot of people. There is a lot of things going on. And I just really appreciated her time. So, yeah, if your role requires you to lead across multiple organisations, I think you'd find this episode really, really helpful. Enjoy. Hey, Kate, thank you so much for joining me today on the Business of Healthcare podcast. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. Thank you, Tara. And thanks for inviting me to be on.
Oh, my pleasure. So Ceddie Fredericks connected us and he said, I know who you need to speak to. You need to speak to Kate. So would you be able to share with our audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes. So my name's Kate Langford. I'm the Chief Medical Officer of NHS Kent and Medway Integrated Care Board. What we do is try and lead and convene the conversation about how we're going to deliver care across the footprint of Kent and Medway.
How long have you been in that post?
So I joined when the ICBs came into being, which was July 22, 1¾ years now. It feels longer, but hey.
And what did you do before? What led you here?
So my clinical background is as an obstetrician. I mostly work in London, did some of my training around the southeast, so a sort of familiar geography to me. And I was frankly interested in how do we make stuff better? How do we make the right thing to do the easiest thing to do? So through my consultant role as an obstetrician, I got involved with what we'd now call quality improvement. And that led to me then stepping into some formal leadership roles, first within an acute trust. And then I did a number of leadership roles that had a broader footprint because I sort of realized that a single trust is never going to cut it. You know, there's lots of players in delivering healthcare for people and just an acute trust is never going to do it by itself. So I was the medical director of the Centre for Workforce Intelligence. And I did that role because I really recognize how a broad and diverse workforce is absolutely key to us being able to deliver the types of healthcare that people want. I worked in NHS Improvement, and there I was working specifically with challenged provider trusts, often with a focus around maternity, because obviously my background is as an obstetrician. So I sort of had parallel pathways, if you like, some work with the national bodies, and also I was working in leadership roles within large acute providers in London. And then at the start of the pandemic, I came to the NHSE regional team for the Southeast. And I worked with the regional team throughout the pandemic. And then as we came out of the pandemic, the ICB started to become a thing. And it felt to me like an integrated care board was a really good footprint to be able to make meaningful change, but still small enough to get your arms around it. And it wasn't going to be top down. We could do it with the system. So that was my journey that brought me to an integrated care board, that sort of utter conviction that we are better together, and that really what lets people down about care is the gaps between us all rather than us individually.
You said the phrase, I think it was the right thing to do and the easiest thing to do. How do you do the right thing that is easy across Kent and Medway? You may feel like it's small enough to put your arms around it, but how many trusts and how many practices and how many community trusts are you dealing with?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a really good point you make there, Tara. So we've got 4 acute trusts. We have a mental health trust. We have a community trust. We also have other people providing services in Kent and Medway. There's another provider of community services, other providers of parts of mental health care. We've got 42 PCNs. We've got the practices that sit within those PCNs. So it is a very large number of people and the bodies they work for that we need to convene to bring together. So for me, this role is all about that communication. How do we shine a light on what could be better? What would be the right thing to do? And how do we understand from partners across the system, why is that not happening by default? What is it that we could collectively change to make the right thing to happen, just the thing that happens?
And what have you been finding? What prevents that from happening?
It's the gaps between organisations, and this will not be unfamiliar to anyone listening to this podcast. This is about when patients have care provided by a number of different providers or are moving between one and the other. That's the bits that fall down. So there are big picture things that only a body that convenes the conversation with everybody could start to push forward, I think. Imagine if we genuinely had a single care record for everybody accessing care anywhere in our system. Think of all the wasted journeys that would fall out of that. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't see your blood test result because it was done over there. Or I know you had that scan, but could we just do it again here because I can't see the result? And the frustration for people using the service, and indeed the frustration for the people, you know, the staff working in the service. So for me, that's an example of a really big and bold thing that if we could facilitate getting the right thing there, i.e. a single record, would have really far-reaching ramifications for how we do stuff.
And are you on that journey now?
Absolutely. So we are constantly talking about what steps can we take? How can we join stuff up? You know, because that's a big thing to pull off, but we can take steps along the way. Promotion of the NHS app, for example. The more people who are using that, the better. The more we get used to the idea that we have an electronic health record that we can see and that the people caring for us at that time can see. We have something called the KMCR, which is a joint care record for Kent and Medway. At the moment, it's not a full-on care record of everything, but it's a really good step in the right direction. So you can see a summary of people's care in there. So we are definitely on that journey. And to be fair, some of that journey happened or started well before the ICB. But this is, I think, the bit where we can pick up the conversation and really try and work with people to keep that energy, keep that enthusiasm, and broker some really good conversations about when you say that just can't happen, tell me more. What is it from your point of view means it just can't happen? Because, you know, I'm sure, Tara, you'll recognize, as will people listening, sometimes you just get so weary with stuff. You go, no, it just can't happen. And you need someone who can step into that space between two people who are going, that just can't happen, and say, okay, let's talk about that.
You've mentioned the word convening. So how do you convene all of the players in Kent and Medway? And more importantly, how do you engage the people that feel like been here, done this, they've just shuffled the deck chairs again, and I'm not in a similar position, I'm in a worse position than I was before.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And of course, there'll often be a particular cut of people you need for a particular topic. But for me, it's often multi-layered. You know, you might need the big room type conversations, at least at the start of something, so that everybody knows what's going on. You will undoubtedly need smaller groups talking about particular parts of any journey you're on, because we all recognize we can't have a conversation with 200 people at once in a big room. But for me, it's how do we keep coming back to, and who else should be in this conversation? Where do we take this conversation to next? Whose view do we need? And one of the things that we've put in place here in Kent and Medway is particularly focusing on primary care, because, you know, it is very difficult to get a chain of communication out into people working in primary care. So I have a deputy CMO who is a local GP. We've asked each of our places, and we have four places in Kent and Medway, to appoint a primary care medical director, someone who has a significant chunk of their week set aside in order to work with the PCNs and the practices in their place, but who is linked in. So we're creating that cascade of professional line discussion, communication, information flow down and up, because I absolutely don't underestimate the challenge of how could we honestly say we thought that every GP partner in Kent and Medway had heard this and knew that they have a chance to contribute. It is really difficult. So we're absolutely focusing on that flow so that we can go from the ICB central, if you like, to the place medical directors. They are all connected to their PCN leads, and the PCN leads are connected to practices, etc. So we're really trying to think about what helps us have those conversations. What helps us know that people know those conversations are going on and they know how to contribute to it as well? So I don't think we've got the full answer yet, but that's kind of what we've put in place so far.
So what does help practices? Because my next question was going to be, and this is not in relation to Kent and Medway, it's kind of more of a generalised statement around how does primary care get its voice heard? So you've got your medical directors at place-based, but what are they asking them, and what is primary care asking of you?
And again, there's more than one answer to that. So what I'm asking the primary care medical directors to do is go and talk to people. Talk to people about what the ICB is here to achieve. What are they saying when they hear that? You know, what are the pinch points for them? We're at the moment in the process of writing a strategy for primary care in Kent and Medway. How do we describe the journey we want the broadest sense of primary care to go on to help deliver the ICB strategy as a whole? So, you know, we've done, and again, it all comes down to different cuts of the same thing. We've done events with PCN leads. We've obviously done events with LMC. We've done, you know, drop-in events, have some supper and join us and talk about anything that you want to. But really, I really see the primary care medical directors of our places as very much the engine room of that local connection. You know, I really believe in that local professional line connection that really helps people be able to have honest conversations about what it is with someone that they think can understand, because that's also their lived experience as a GP themselves. And I think that's really vital.
Some of the challenges will be bread and butter, so estates. In Kent and Medway, like when you ask people, what are you challenged with? How can we help you? And they say, our estate isn't fit for purpose. We don't have enough room to accommodate our staff, or we can't afford it anymore. We can't rent our rooms out because then there's an unintended consequence down the line. How do you support practices? And I suppose it's not just a primary care thing around healthcare estates. How do you approach that conversation? Because there'll be things within your control and things outside of your control.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, things outside of our control very often apply in the primary care arena, you know, because of the nature of the ownership of the estate, for example. But you are absolutely right when you said not just primary care, but other providers as well. So what we have done is we've done a focus of mapping what healthcare estate provision do we have? We've also looked at what do the councils have. So we've brought that into one place now. And, you know, we're at an early stage of this journey so that we have a much better view of who's got what, who else could use that space if it's not currently in use. You know, is there a better use of the estates we've got? And a part of that, you know, we need to understand what's available on the site, what's the cost of it, et cetera, because we've kind of stumbled to a place, I think, historically sometimes, rather than really saying, do you know what, if I'd have known that then, I'd have turned right at that point, not left. So we're really trying to get to the bottom of all that now and understand what estate is available to us and what is the art of the possible in using that in a different way to make it easier for everybody to deliver healthcare.
So one of the things I wanted to ask is around, and given all of your experience, you would have been involved in writing many strategies. How do we make the strategy real life and not just a pretty expensive document?
There's no point having a lot of nice words on a page. It needs to be, going back to the old story about JFK and NASA, it needs to be the "we're here to put a man on the moon" statement. So for us, you know, what we are here for is to deliver equitable access to care, outcomes from care, and experience of care. And that is our guiding light in what are we here for. We need to look at basically service pathways or clinical service pathways, but not just which hospital provides what, the whole pathway, you know, what's done in primary, what can be done in community, etc. And then, you know, one about the standards of care. You know, can't give you spoilers because we haven't written it yet. We're still in that process of doing that stakeholder engagement and iterating it each time. But that's how we're approaching it, to make it really real.
And your approach to stakeholder engagement. So you mentioned there'll be face-to-face. I'm sure there'll be a survey. You've got your place-based medical directors, patient feedback, like anything else. And the only reason I'm asking, because somebody contacted me today around their primary care strategy. And I think everybody just wants confirmation that they're doing the right thing. So like, yeah, what's been your approach to drafting your strategy? I know you're still in it.
And particularly in terms of the primary care strategy, because that was actually been running for a little while and predated us kicking off the work around the ICB strategy as a whole. We actually extended the length of time that we've been in consultation on it, because we realised the more places we went, the more really rich feedback we got, particularly from the people of Kent and Medway. So actually, we took a decision at one stage to say, do you know what, we're still hearing stuff coming in. So we're not going to close the consultation period now and move on. We're prepared to say we've put the date back of publishing this for a really good reason, because, you know, we want to allow the time. With the best will in the world, sometimes it takes time for the knowledge that the opportunity to speak is out there to filter to people. So we took a really deliberate decision to wait longer, because we reckoned that people were still coming to hear about it and wanted to give us our views. So my overarching thing is, you can't communicate too much or too often. And you just have to keep going back and looking for other arenas in which to communicate. And I can guarantee you'll always find another one somewhere.
Can you share any surprising feedback that you've received so far that you really thought, I'm really surprised, I never really thought of that, or any surprising stories you've heard?
So I think, and in a way, this probably isn't really a surprise, but really grateful for the positive messages we were getting about primary care. You know, clearly we're asking for where could it be better and what could be different. But, you know, it's always nice to have a reminder of how much people value primary care. And again, on the negative side, probably not a surprise, but really how much people are worried about dental access came through as well, because obviously we're doing primary care as a whole. So it's been really important for us to make really clear, and now we're writing the strategy, that we are thinking about broader primary care, as well as obviously general practice is a really important part of that. So other than that, I don't honestly think any surprises, but perhaps a surprise of how positive some of the feedback from the public was.
In your engagement event, so where you're bringing optometry and dental and general practice together, are they talking to each other? Are they saying, we have this challenge, or we've overcome it like this? Can you see those conversations taking place with our cousins and pharmacy, of course?
Yeah, so in fact, what we think we're going to do now is we're actually going to set up, we haven't nailed the name yet, but in effect, a primary care board with representatives from dental, optometry and community pharmacy, as well as primary care, so that to enable those conversations, but also to ask them to then give us a broad view across all of those spheres. If we're going to do something, take the next step, what is it that collectively you can see could help you work together in this space?
Well, I've got some good feedback for you, and I always share this on Twitter. So I'm in Whitstable. Not too long ago, my daughter was experiencing really like swollen glands. I think we did an e-consult to the GP practice, phoned back straight away.
Yep.
Said, I don't want to worry you, mum and dad, but I'm going to make an urgent referral to ENT. Within 2 days, we had our appointment. And in the space of about 3 weeks, she'd had like 2 scans. We'd had multiple appointments. She had blood tests, but it was seamless. It was seamless. And we had to go down to Margate and Canterbury. So it wasn't like it was all condensed, you know, like in one site. It wasn't like, well, it works because we were just here. And it was just perfect. And everybody was friendly. And I remember saying, like, when I walked in, I was a bit like, it doesn't smell like a hospital. Usually they have like this funny smell. And just everybody we spoke to was really, really kind. And I think the cherry on the cake was a lot of these appointments happened on a Sunday and they asked us to bring our appointment forward. And every person we spoke to said, oh, thank you so much for bringing the appointment forward. Really appreciate it. And I want to feed that back because I know East Kent has gone through a tough time. And I know it's, in many respects, it's probably still going through a tough time, but it was really, really, really good.
Yeah, and that's brilliant. And thank you so much for telling me that, you know, because it is easy for people to sometimes not see the good they do every day or not hear it celebrated. So thank you so much for telling me that. That's really, really good to know.
So what keeps you up at night, or what is currently keeping you up at night, if anything?
Well, I have to say, and I think it's my years of obstetric practice, not much keeps me awake at night, thank goodness. I learned to sleep very easily when I could as an obstetrician. But the types of things I worry about is I worry about pace, because there's so much out there that I really would like to achieve with everybody. I worry about our ability to put some pace behind it, which, you know, which is hard. I worry about people falling down the holes between organizations, because however brilliant your experience is in a particular organization, that gloss can go instantly if, for example, when they said someone will come and see you at home in 2 days' time, that person doesn't turn up. And particularly then, if then it's like, well, who do I ring? Oh, well, it's not us. It should have been them who made that person come and see you. And that's where it gets really hard for people. So I would really like the collective NHS to be able to offer a single front door for people. And I was really impressed, you know, Tara, I was talking to someone who'd helped develop the Gov website, you know, gov.uk, and their ethos was you shouldn't have to understand government to get what you want out of this website. And actually, when you think about it, we don't have that in the NHS, do you? You shouldn't need to understand that the person who was coming to see you was actually from the community trust, not the acute trust. So now the acute trust can't help you if they haven't turned up. You shouldn't have to understand that. You should be able to put your request for help into one portal, and then someone behind the scenes goes, ah, so the person you were expecting was a nurse from the community trust, so I will speak to them about it, rather than you hanging on the phone back to the department in the acute that discharged you, which of course now hasn't got a clue. So I think for me, it's always, I'm aware while we don't have something like that, there's a risk of people not getting the seamless care that they would want to have. And so that's the bit that I still keep coming back to. We haven't done that yet. We need to get that.
So I suppose it's the same question, but slightly different. But how do you help organisations work with the NHS without losing the will? Because it's a hard place to navigate. It's hard for patients, but it's also hard for professionals. There is lots of people that feel that they can provide solutions and aid and support to the NHS, but it's really hard for private organisations or charities to understand how decisions are made and what framework to be on. And sometimes contracts just get given and sometimes they don't, and it doesn't always feel transparent.
Yeah, that can be really hard to decode, can't it? So we have a representative from the VCSC sector on our trust board as a partner member. So we have a visible person who understands the challenges of that sector working with the trust. So where it's that type of organisation, we have a visible person that they could reach out to say, help, how do I decode this? And in terms of businesses wanting to work with the NHS, this is very often innovative new businesses who don't, you know, have established relationships yet or know how to get in there. So one of the things we've done is we've run a few innovation events where what we have said is we have this issue. Who's out there who might have something that would help us deal with this issue? And we find that leads to some better conversations than simply sort of people pitching up and saying, I've got this thing, could you use it? I think it really helps people understand this is our need. What have you got that you might be able to come and talk to me about? I think that may be a helpful approach. We're trying to get that sort of place where people can come with a new and innovative idea or product and say, oh, what would I do next? So we're looking to be able to provide support around, well, if you wanted to pitch that to the NHS, you know, you might need this governance, this sign off, etc. So we're working on what we can do to make that more transparent for people.
Would you be able to share, and I think in your ICB role, an approach which you would class as a failure? You've done something and you've gone, actually, the feedback is we should not do this again. And I suppose it's a lesson learned versus a failure. But just, I think we do tough things and things go wrong. And I don't think that they are talked about in a positive light, because every day, lots of us are doing things every day that we've not done before. So, of course, not everything we touch is going to turn to gold at the first time.
Yes, that's right. I think for me, you underestimate at your peril. And I think we've done this, the sort of force of a community who doesn't feel that things have been explained to them. So a service change has been made that we might regard as really minor, nothing very exciting, but actually it hasn't been socialized with people. They don't understand the rationale for why you have wanted to do that. And therefore, you know, they are against it. It's not necessarily so much even the service change. It's that feeling of being done unto and not being connected to the discussion about why do we think this should happen. So for me, that is a real lesson learned, where we have failed to set our stall out in a way that connects with people. My learning is it won't go away. It'll just get louder. So, you know, you really need to pay attention when you're starting to get those signals. And nothing works better than going and meeting with people and actually sitting down in a room and hearing what they need to say and talking it through with them.
Is your role stressful?
How do I answer that? I would say, compared to when I was in clinical practice running a labour ward, absolutely not. It's not the same type of stress as being a clinician at the sharp end of something. Where it is stressful is, comes back a bit to that lack of pace. There's so much I would love to do and accomplish. And you've got to spend the time finding those partners who can work with you, who also want to do that. You know, unfortunately, I don't have an army of people that I could say, look, guys, this would be really great. Can we start doing something? So that's a bit stressful sometimes if you can't find the people you need to champion something and take it forward. But the stress is over-egging it, you know. Compared to clinical practice and what people do at the front line, then, you know, no, I don't think this is stress in the same sense as that at all.
And I think I've got a question around, I can never say the word, bureaucracy. So that's one of the NHS's aims, to reduce it. Are you reducing it? Because of the scale of your, I know you may have a small team, you work within a huge system.
Yes, I think we do. I think we reduce the bureaucracy by being able to talk to people. And it comes back to that, what can you get your arms around? So we can have much more meaningful relationships with the providers on our patch than if their next point of contact, if you like, was the region, the whole of the Southeast region. So all the way around the bottom of London, right as far as Oxford. So yes, I think we cut bureaucracy in that sense. What I think the wider NHS really would benefit from, though, is that really clear step back by regional, colleagues now that the ICBs are here. I think that's something that's still in the process of separation. And I think it will really help providers with a reduction in bureaucracy when there's no chance of us asking about something and then someone else from higher up coming and asking about the same thing. So I think that's an ongoing piece of work to keep that bureaucracy to a minimum.
And would you be able to share what you've been up to this week? What does the life of a chief medical officer look like?
Yeah, well, so this week I've been doing some training with colleagues from ambulance, fire and police around major incident management. So that's a bit, don't do that very often, but it was fabulous to work with those colleagues and to understand how we would come together. What I thought was really interesting in that is they hadn't really honestly thought through what we could do in that space, we the collective NHS, other than be a receiver of casualties. And when they realised we could be quite active about, for example, setting up minor injury reception centres and things like that, they're like, oh, you could coordinate stuff. It's like, yes, we could bring the partners together and help. So that was the first bit of my week. This morning, I've been in strategy development sessions with a number of different partners across the system. This is our NHS family strategy for how are we going to deliver on healthcare. There is, of course, an ICS strategy, which is that broader piece around health and well-being. But this is our NHS strategy we're focusing on now. So I've been with colleagues from provider trusts and primary care, looking at how we take that on the next step. And then I'm going to spend this afternoon having one-to-ones with people because, you know, I'm a great believer in talking to people directly. Let's hear what people have to say. And that discussion about, so what's our next step? What can we do next? So quite a lot of my week is often in those one-to-one conversations.
Do you ever struggle with saying no because you just don't have the time?
Yes. There's so many things people will reach out and say, you know, could you come to this event or something else, whatever. And that's lovely. I try and pre-commit to some things because I know that if I leave it till later, there might be something a bit more transactional pops into the diary. So I do try and make sure I can make some of those events. And people are really kind and they invite me to all sorts of things. And, you know, I can't always do it because I'm often invited to be in two or three places at once. So yes, I do struggle when I have to say no to something like that, because I would love to be out there making those connections, talking to people, hearing directly from people, and frankly, out there selling the vision for how we could be better together and how we can work collaboratively to achieve, you know, a better level of healthcare that actually meets people's needs, centered around their needs, not around our needs as providers and what bit we can do. So yeah, that's always disappointing when I have to say no to something. But having said that, I'd hate it if all those invitations dried up.
So better together, is that like the Kent and Medway, dare I say, slogan? I keep hearing it, I keep seeing it, or is it not?
No, I think it is. I think it is. It is something we talk about for ourselves, for Kent and Medway as an ICS. You know, it is in effect our slogan, you know, we are better together.
For the other ICS, ICB colleagues that may be listening today, they are struggling with engagement. What one tip could you give them? I know you kind of said, don't make sure you don't underestimate, you know, like the power of the community that feels left out. But any other advice around engagement?
Double the length of time you think you're going to spend on it. Really try and think about what are the different forums, do different cuts of offers of engagement, because different things will appeal to different people. So that's the thing I've learned most. You need lots of different forums and maybe iterate it. You know, when you've tried the first one, I often think it's a great question to ask. And who else would we have liked to have here? Who else can we now reach out to and talk to? I'd always ask that iterative question, I think.
Kate, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
No, thanks for inviting me on, Tara.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you like what you hear, I would absolutely love it if you left us an iTunes rating and 5-star review. I know many of you give us a shout out on social media, which is lovely to see you guys listening to the podcast. So please come and find us on Twitter at THC Primary Care, on Instagram and on LinkedIn. Just look for Tara Humphrey. And if you're not subscribed to our newsletter, please do. You get to hear more insights, more confessions, some tips and tools, and a roundup of our activity over the week. So click on join the newsletter in the show notes, and I will see you in the next episode.